Chapter 29. Ultisca was no more. The peaceful warren of antiquated streets he had so enjoyed exploring as a youth on Prospero was now in ashes and burning rubble. Warriors picked careful paths through the smouldering ruins, firing from the hip or fighting with axes and swords. The coastline was invisible, obscured by fog banks of artillery fire. Spurts of yellow fire, followed by dull metallic coughs, snatched at the clouds, and another portion of his beloved city would vanish in a rippling series of fiery detonations. Magnus watched the death of Tisca from the highest balcony of his pyramid, the one structure that had so far escaped the destruction. Nothing reflective remained in his chambers, nowhere for the insidious voice of his temptation to wheedle and cajole him into making yet another error of judgment. He gripped the edge of the balcony and wept bitter tears for his lost world and his dying sons. What had once been a wondrous beacon of illumination for all who cared to look upon it was now a maelstrom of battle. The northern spur of the city was a raging inferno, its palaces ablaze and its parklands ashened wastelands. Further south, the port was a giant black stain on the horizon, its structures demolished in the wake of his brother's attack. He sensed Leman Russ in the western reaches of the city, fighting at the Raptora Pyramid. Constantine Valdor was at his side, and the warrior named Amon. With his inner eye, Magnus felt the courage and elation of the Thousand Sons who fought alongside Phocis Dakar, Hathor Mart, and Aura Magma. It grieved him to know that most of these men would soon be dead, for the Wolf King left only desolation in his wake. In the east, Adamon and his warriors were holding the invaders at bay. Not even the savagery of the wolves or the power of the custodes could break through Adamon's defences, his warriors using their predictive powers to counter every assault. Few Sisters of Silence fought in the east, for the majority were at the side of Leman Russ and Valdor. The attackers had not brought enough of the Null Maidens to take Tisca, assuming the assault would be little more than a mopping-up operation. They thought the bombardment from orbit would be enough, and that alone angered him. Though the majority of the Spire Guard had been swept away in the opening moments of the battle, the Thousand Sons had rallied magnificently and prevented the battle becoming a rout. A thin line of warriors in crimson armour linked the six pyramids of Tisca, forming a circular perimeter with Oculum Square at its centre. The Pyramid of Fotep was the southernmost of the pyramids, the glittering water surrounding it awash with sodden pages of ancient wisdom lost forever in the name of fear. Crackling currents of ether surged through his body, begging to be released and let loose among the foe. Magnus fought to hold it in check. The fire of the great ocean battered him, like the most desirable addiction calling to him across the veil between worlds. Magnus wanted nothing more than to descend to the streets of Tisca and turn back the invaders, to show them the true extent of his powers. His fingers sparked at the thought. He clenched his fists and turned his thoughts inwards. He heard the voices of his sons crying out to him, begging him to take the field of battle, but he ignored them, forcing their voices from his head. It was the hardest thing he had ever done. One plea threatened to cut through his resolve, the voice of his dearest son. "Help us," it said. "I cannot, Azek," he said between clenched teeth. "I must not." Smoke filled the streets around the outer precincts of the port, choking the light and oxygen from the day. Booming explosions marched through the city like the tread of drunken gods, and the bark of gunfire mingled with screams in a pitch-perfect rendition of a hellish choir. Fael Toron ducked back behind a fallen statue to reload his bolter as a stuttering blast of fire tore through the walls of the fountain house. 100 warriors of his fellowship held this portion of the perimeter, with a further 200 on either side of him. 3 times the enemy forces had tried to break through from the port, and 3 times the guns and blades of the 7th had hurled them back. Fael Toron's warriors knew this part of Tisca like no other, and the divinatory commands from the Corvidae allowed them to coordinate their defences with perfect cohesion. Coupled with the information gathered by the Athenaeans, the defences were always perfectly aligned to meet every attack. Corpses littered the streets, both enemy and friend, for the defences had not been held without cost. Blood splashed the pristine marble of the walls, and rivers of vital fluid flowed in the cracks in the streets. Fael Torren had exhausted 12 magazines, and only a regular supply of ammunition from Spire Guard squads had kept their guns firing. A cramping pain clenched in his gut, and he grunted as an unidentifiable sickness sent spasms through his limbs. He shook off the sensation, forcing down the bilious phlegm building in his throat and shaking out the sudden blurring of his vision. He blinked away bright spots before his eyes as a series of fiery blasts ripped through their lines. "Watch the right!" he shouted, seeing three of his warriors torn apart in a blitzing stream of cannon fire. The distinctive thumping noise told Fael Torren it was too heavy for an infantry gun. Crimson armoured warriors dashed through the rubble towards the gap, bearing heavy weapons. He risked a glance over the fallen statue of a golden lion. The district between the port and the Timoran library was unrecognisable, its colonnaded processionals and arch follies now a tumble-down wasteland of blazing ruins and jumbled stone. The salty tang of sea air was laden with chemical pollutants from the blazing port, the enormous volume of gunfire and the pyres of burning books. Space wolves and golden warriors moved cautiously through the smouldering remains of what had once been a gallery of pre-old knight sculpture, their forms unknown and of obviously alien manufacture. They were now crushed fragments beneath the invaders' boots, and Fael Torren felt the ether simmering beneath his skin as Detoa amplified his collar. He took a deep breath, reining in his emotions. The enumerations weren't helping, and he could feel his tutelary's raging desire to hurt the attackers, threatening to overwhelm his tactical sense. "That would make me little better than them," he hissed, forcing its red rage down. Another spray of bullets tore a line through the golden line, chewing up the soft metal as though it were as porous as sandstone. Fael Torren rolled away from the disintegrating lion and scrambled over the cover of a fallen arc of stonework. He recognised it as part of the gallery's domed roof and looked over his shoulder to see a plume of grey smoke coiling from the building's interior. Streaking contrails of speeders flashed overhead amid a series of stuttering, strobing detonations. Portions of the gallery crashed down to the east, burying at least 30 of his warriors beneath tons of rubble and sending up a billowing cloud of dust. No sooner had the walls of the gallery fallen than an ululating howl erupted from the invaders. "Push them back!" he shouted, swinging around the fallen portion of the dome and opening fire, pumping shot after shot into the mass of charging space wolves. His warriors followed suit, filling their designated fire sectors with lethally accurate bolter fire. Some of the enemy warriors went down, but not enough. Fael Torren estimated at least 600 space wolves were pushing hard from the port. They were feral barbarians, with none of the grace and poise an Astartes should possess. Their armour was hung with fetishes, skulls and furs, like some primitive tribe of savages that deserved no less a fate than extinction. Many charged into battle without helms, either casting them aside in their bloodlust or too stupid to care about protecting their most vital organ. Fael Torren made them pay for that by picking his targets, blasting skulls from shoulders with every shot. Gunfire streaked back and forth, fizzing lines of fire that filled the air with explosive shells. He ducked back behind the ruins of the dome, hearing the hard thud of bolt rounds against its copper-sheathed surface. A warrior in red scrambled into cover with him, and he nodded curtly at his philosopher's Tulek. The man was a fine adept and had mastered his powers more quickly than any of the Seventh Fellowship. Even Fael Torren had struggled to master the breadth and power of abilities brought back to Prospero by Magnus and the Legion. Where the other fellowships employed their mystical abilities, the Seventh fought this battle with conventional means. "We can't hold him like this," said Tulek. "We need to use our powers." "Not yet," said Fael Torren. "They are weapons of last resort." "This is the last resort," urged Tulek. "What else is there?" Fael Torren knew the man was right, but still he hesitated. His men were nowhere near as experienced at wielding the great ocean's powers as the other fellowships, and he feared to unleash them in so violent a cauldron. But, as Tulek said, what else was there? "Very well," he said at last. "Pass the word that everyone is to use whatever means they need to push these bastards back into the sea." Tulek nodded, and Fael Toron read his ferocious anticipation as the order was given. He looked around the fallen dome and drew in a breath as he saw a monstrous shape thumping through the rubble behind the space wolves, a grey giant of thick ceramite plates and whirring clanking mechanics. The dreadnought was dust-covered and fire-blackened, its hull dented with impacts and its back banner in flames. One arm was a bloodied, electrically sheathed fist, the other a whirring, rotating launcher that spun up to replenish its ammo from a giant missile hopper at its shoulder. "Move!" shouted Fael Toron, as a series of warheads spat from the launcher and streaked towards them. The missile slammed into the ruins of the dome, and a tremendous explosion hurled him through the air. The blast tore his bolter from his grip, and he slammed down into a crater sloshing with blood. He rolled and reached for a weapon, but there was nothing within reach. Shredded corpses of thousand suns were strewn around the crater, their bodies catastrophically mangled by gunfire and explosions. Once again, the nauseous cramp seized him, and he bent double as he felt Datoa's power flow into him, unbidden and unstoppable. All around Fael Toron, the rubble rose up into the air, and the blood boiled at his feet. The power of the great ocean flowed through him, but deep in the cellular core of him, a dreadful flaw was already unmaking him. The Thousand Suns were dying. Scores died in the opening minutes of the Wolf King's attack, his fury unstoppable and his power immeasurable. Clad in the finest battle plate and armed with a frost blade that clove warriors in two with single strokes, his fury was that of a pack hunter who knows his brothers are with him. His huskarls were grimly efficient butchers of men, their Terminator armor proof against all but the luckiest shots and blades. Though Phocis Dekar could see no more of the hateful Sisters of Silence, he knew they were there. For his powers were weakening, bleeding from his hands like ink from a splintered quill. The custodians slew with powerful strokes of their guardian spears, hewing armor and flesh with efficient strokes that hit with precisely the force required to do the job of killing. Phocis Dekar felt his tutelary's impotent rage as its power was leached away. He drew ever more deeply on his own reserves of power, feeding them with the very essence of his soul, turning his emotions outwards as he and his men fought for their very survival. Enemy warriors surrounded them, warriors who moments before had been on the brink of defeat. The lance of the Thousand Suns had plunged into the body of the wolves and cut deep towards the heart, but Russ had deflected the fatal stroke. Worse, it had been turned back against them. The space wolves clawed at them, the custodies cut them down, and the slavering wolves bit and snapped at the edges of the battle. "We have to pull back!" shouted Hathor Mart over the thunderous din of gunfire and clashing blades. "We are overextended!" Phocis Dekar knew he was right, but could focus on nothing save the monstrously powerful form of Leman Russ as he slaughtered the Thousand Suns without a care for the priceless repositories of knowledge and experience that he was snuffing out with every blow. "Do it!" he snarled. "Reform the perimeter!" Hathor Mart read the fury in his voice and asked, "What are you going to do?" "I can end this," he said. "Now do it!" Hathor Mart needed no second telling, and the order was passed through the ranks of the Thousand Suns. In disciplined groups, the warriors of the Second, Third, and Eighth Fellowships collapsed their lines and fell back. Sensing they had regained the initiative, the Space Wolves surged forwards as they scented victory. "You think we'd make it that easy for you?" hissed Phocis Dekar. He whipped his Hecker staff around and surged into the heaving melee with a roar of hatred to equal any lupine howl. A blast of blue fire hissed from his staff, spearing into the chest of the warrior before him and setting him alight. He gave an animal bray of pain and fell back as Phocis Dekar and his coven pushed into the mass of enemy warriors. A fiery bloom of light erupted beside him, and he saw that Oromagma and his warriors were with him. Phocis Dekar knew he should be angry with the captain of the Eighth for disobeying his order, but instead felt only hateful vindication. Jets of white-hot fire streamed from Oromagma's hands, melting ceramite plates as though they were softened wax. Burning wolves howled their agony to the sky, and dying warriors had the air sucked from their lungs by the superheated blast that consumed them. Phocis Dekar's bolt pistol boomed and blew off the head of a custodian's warrior who'd lost his helmet. His staff swept fiery arcs as it split armour like eggshells. He killed with brutal skill, feeling a blazing heat surge within his body. his eyes filled with light and his limbs burned with fire. Ahead, he could see the Wolf King and his golden allies. His vision narrowed until all he could see was the path his staff would take as it shattered armour and burnt his foes with fire. He killed warriors by the dozen, feeling the sensation in every cell of his flesh. His arm swept up and down like a piston, smashing through armour and shattering bone with a strength he had never known. His body seethed with power, but his every iota of attention was fixed on his prey. The enemy fell back from him in horror, unable to match his power. He hurled warriors aside like straw, battering them into the ground with waves of thought until they were little more than smears of gore on the marble. The power flowing through him was incredible. Phocis Tikal looked over as Aura Magma faced the Wolf King with fire wreathing his limbs in searing light. His fellow captain loosed a flood of ether at the Primarch. Phocis Tikal roared in triumph as the flames engulfed Leman Russ, and Aura Magma's fire met the chill armour of Leman Russ in an explosion of light like the birth of a star. Russ barely blinked, but the effect on Aura Magma was as incredible as it was horrific. The enormous power of Aura Magma turned from the Wolf King's armour as light is reflected from a mirror, and his screams were hideous to behold as the ether's spite burned its creator. Aura Magma howled in such agony that all who heard his screams were moved to pity as the ether devoured his very essence. A blazing pyre of agony, Aura Magma fled through the crush of bodies, and the space wolves parted before him, none willing to go near so damned a soul. At last, Phocis Tikal hammered his way through to the golden warriors surrounding Russ and laughed as he saw their terror of him. Their leader turned to face him, and Phocis Tikal relished the look of disgusted hatred he saw. Dark hair spilled from beneath his red-plumed helm, and Phocis Tikal saw he had the eyes of a killer. "Valdor," hissed Phocis Tikal, the words slithering and wet. Constantine Valdor held his long-bladed pole arm extended before him. "What are you?" he bellowed, and Phocis Tikal laughed at the foolishness of such a question. "I am your death," he boomed, but the words were mangled and distorted by the twisted shape of his mouth. Phocis Tikal loomed over the chief custodies, and only now did he feel the changes wrought upon his body. His flesh was a riot of form and function, its every organ and limb reshaped by a madness of transformation. Flesh and armour ran together in a hideous meld of organic and inorganic material, and the bubbling meat of his body seethed with unbridled ambition. How could he not have noticed so profound a change? The answer came to him as soon as the question formed in his mind. His flesh was no longer his to call his own. Utopia's presence filled him, its hateful relish and patient malice unlocking the rampant potential locked in his genetic makeup. A wild and untamed transformative power that had lain dormant and contained within him was now given a free rein, unleashing nearly 2 centuries of change in as many minutes. In Valdor's eyes, Phocis Tikal saw what he and the Legion had become, and knew then that this fate had always been theirs. Valdor came at him with his guardian spear aimed at his heart, and Phocis Tikal finally understood why his Primarch had chosen not to fight. "Monster!" cried Valdor, driving the spear into his mutant flesh. "I know," said Phocis Tikal sadly, dropping his weapons and closing his eyes. The golden blade clove his heart, and death was a welcome release. Fael Tauron rose out of the crater in a blaze of lightning. Hissing blood streamed from his armour, and whipping arcs of power blazed at his fingertips. His armour shone with inner luminescence, as though it contained the fiery heart of a plasma reactor. With eyes saturated with etheric energy, Fael Tauron saw the hellish battlescape before him in all its visceral horror. The host of Leman Russ and the custodies had all but won the field of battle. Like a sword thrust at the unprotected vitals of a reeling foe, the space wolves had cut deep into Tisca. The perimeter of the Thousand Suns was holding, but that it would soon break was beyond question. No force in the galaxy could resist so furious an attack, so lethal a drive, and a foe so utterly without mercy. No force but the Thousand Suns with the power of the great ocean at their command. Fael Tauron saw the ruin of his fellowship, the broken bodies and the shattered skulls taken as trophies by howling space wolves. He took in the vista with a glance, and his rage spilled out in a torrent of force. Those enemy warriors closest to him were hurled back, the armour peeled from their bodies and their flesh torn from their bones. The furred abominations that ran with Russ's warriors exploded in bright smears, their inner light snuffed out in an instant with alien cries of rage. Fael Toron floated over the battlefield, his arms extended from his side as he swatted enemy warriors from his path with his thoughts. He laughed at the ease with which he commanded such powers, delirious with the sensations flooding him. How he had feared these powers and dreaded the difficulty in commanding them, but this was no more difficult than breathing. His warriors followed behind him, the fire that flowed from his hands pouring into them and filling them with light. The power was wild, but Fael Toron didn't care, letting the chaotic energies flow from the great ocean with him as its willing conduit. A blizzard of explosive shells streamed from the cannons of three dreadnoughts, wolf-clad machines adorned like totemistic idols. Fael Toron unmade the first, disassembling it into its component parts with a gesture. He felt the anguish of the desolate scrap of flesh at its heart as it died, and took pleasure in its terror. In a fit of dark amusement, he turned the remaining two upon one another, letting their guns rip each other apart until nothing remained save torn fragments of smoking metal. All around him, the warriors of the Seventh Fellowship burned with the same fire that poured into him. As he grew in power and confidence, so too did his warriors, their transformation an echo of his own. A pair of Predator battle tanks opened fire on him. He lifted the vehicles from the ground and hurled them out to sea, laughing at the horrified faces of the space wolves. They fell back, gathering in frightened packs as they cowered in ruins of their own making. Fael Toron's body shook with the force of the power passing through him, and he fought to control it, remembering the catechisms and higher enumerations that Magnus and Araman had taught him. Power was only useful when it was controlled, they had told him, and Fael Toron understood the truth of that as he felt his grip on its leash slipping. The Toa, once his tutelary, now his devourer, swooped down and filled him with more power than even the greatest master of the ether could contain. No! He cried, feeling the savage glee of the Toa as their roles were suddenly reversed. Agonizing pain tore through him, and Fael Toron screamed as his limbs ruptured with the force of the energies pouring into him. His body could not contain such titanic forces, and no mental discipline could prevent what was happening to his flesh from taking place. Fael Toron threw back his head and gave one last scream of horrified understanding before his body exploded with the violence of a newborn star. A kilometre to the east, Calophis marched Canis Vertex towards the smoking, fire-blackened ruin of the Corvidae Pyramid. Thick columns of smoke poured from the giant building as its priceless and irreplaceable tomes burned. Tiny figures in gold and grey fled from his titanic strides. Missiles and hard rounds melted on his fire shield. He was invulnerable and invincible. How could he go back to making war like everyone else after such an experience? To control maniples of robots through the psychically resonant crystals was sublime, but to command a god of the battlefield was the greatest joy of all. What his weapons did not burn, his enormous, splay-clawed feet crushed, and he left a trail of devastation more thorough than any the space wolves might have made. Calophis did not care. Buildings could be rebuilt, cities renewed, but the chance to bestride the world as a colossus of metal might never come again. From his throne in the Pyrrhae Pyramid, he felt the etheric fire burning his skin, but knew he had to maintain his control over the Titan. Lives and the future of Prospero depended upon it. Utopia's fire ran like molten gold through the limbs of Canis Vertex, though he felt its desperate urge to command, to wreak harm like he could only dream. Calophis jealously held on to his control, even as he felt Utopia's power increase with every life taken and structure obliterated. He forced himself to concentrate on the battle, sweeping his gaze over the city to see where his immense firepower and strength would be best deployed. The port was the key. Heavy transports bearing yet more soldiers from orbit swooped low over the sea to debark warriors by the hundred with every passing minute. Further out, Tisca's northern perimeter was still holding. Araman and the Corvidae stood shoulder to shoulder with the Athenians and Spireguard, fighting with rare courage to hold the seaborne invaders at bay. Araman could do without his help for the time being. To destroy the port would deny the invaders the beachhead they needed to complete the destruction of the Thousand Suns. Colophis steered his mighty charge towards the port, fists spitting flame and death with every stride. Colophis did not perceive the environment around Canis Vertex as its long dead princeps once had. He felt the ebb and flow of battle more keenly than any moderati. Etheric energy washed from the battle at the Raptora Pyramid, and he smiled to know such power. No sooner had he attuned his senses to the battles raging below him than he felt the sudden surge of energy on the far side of the Corvidae Pyramid. He felt Feltoron's presence, but his eyes snapped open as he felt the incredible power building in the captain of the Seventh. Too late, he halted Canis Vertex's forward momentum. "Throne, no!" he hissed, as a howling column of searing white fire, fully 1,000 meters in diameter, erupted skyward in a blaze of hellish light. The clouds vanished in an instant as a second sun shone throughout Tisca. Canis Vertex reeled from the blast, and Colophis felt the enormous, surging swell of etheric energy pour through the gaping rent torn in the fabric of the world. It blew out his flame shield in an instant, stripping the Titan back to its bare metal and beyond. The crystals bonded with its complex locomotive mechanism shattered, and Utuper screamed in triumph as it wrested control from him. Its triumph was short-lived, as the Titan's molten skeleton buckled in the intolerable heat. Its limbs folded beneath its enormous bulk, and the battle engine crashed down on the Corvidae Pyramid, completing the destruction Otha Weirdmake had begun. Colophis fought to sever his connection to the doomed war engine, but Utuper would not release its grip, and etheric feedback lashed back upon him. He drew in all his power as Magister Templi of the Pyrae to hold back the fire, but no power in the galaxy could withstand so monstrous a force. Colophis had a moment to savour the irony of his death before the fire consumed him utterly, and the entire pyramid of the Pyrae exploded in a searing fireball of glass and steel.